you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi. John. Hey.
Oh, I wonder if the listeners love your music as much as I do.
I don't think they do.
I hope they do.
They never mention it, which I feel like they just, they probably hit the, like, the fast forward 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Until
you
are talking.
Yeah, that might be true. That might be true.
Wow. Now I know how you really feel.
Now you know how, yeah, how things go.
How are you doing, Johnny boy?
I'm doing well, but I have a little bit of an issue at the top of the show.
Oh, Lord.
Which is that, you know, I had been saying recently, I really wanted to make sure we were drinking again on the show. It's called Martinis and Murder.
Yeah, for fuck's sake, people.
For fuck's sake, people. It's called Martinis and Murder. Because I've just been drinking coffee nonstop. You know, frankly, midday when we record this episode, I definitely need a pick-me-up in a sense. Especially in these cold, dark days at, like, the sun sets at, like, noon. I want to give my shout-out, if you don't mind me doing it at the top of the show, to my friend Annie, because she gave me this great idea that instead of, because, you know, we're all socially distancing. I don't want to go into even a single store, to be completely honest with you. I would rather, listen, if I can pick up my groceries, why would I go in to get them? You know what I mean?
Of course.
So instead of going into a liquor store, Darren, my friend Annie, who is completely obsessed with you, who is every time, you know, we play tennis, I see her every week. She mentions you. She wants to know how you're doing. She wishes you were best friends. I'm like, listen, I'm here too. You know, like, can I be your friend, Annie?
Who are you? Who is this?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's okay. Basically what's happening. But she gave me this great idea that I could go pick up a drink at this awesome walk-up bar that's in my hometown called Corner Tavern. Shout out to Corner Tavern, where a listener actually named Kristen works, by the way. And she's the one, I don't know if you remember the story, that gave me a free drink a year or so ago
when I walked in. Oh, I remember.
And I was like, oh my God, thank you. Well, they have a walk-up bar, basically. And I was like, oh my God, Annie, that's such a great idea. I could just go down, pick up my drink, and head home and start the show. And I didn't have enough time to do that this week. So I told Annie I was going to do it. I didn't. Shout out to Annie for that great idea. I will be drinking, however, next week. It'll be very important to me.
Well, all I need you to do is get drunk and say Lanford Crawford or something like that and do
Lanford
it.
Lanford Crawford. Next week I will.
What do you think that I made today?
You are likely drinking your either water or a vodka soda.
Okay, well, I'm drinking both, bitch, because you gotta hydrate, okay?
That's true.
You heard me take a sip, but I want to get into this week's case because it's an interesting one.
Yes, let's get right into it. And can you just let my friend Annie know how much you love her? Because she, I think, would
really appreciate
that. Are
you fucking kidding
me?
Annie, DM me. I would love to talk to you. Annie, you're the best. You're amazing. I'm sorry you have to hang out with John.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly.
At least it's not Matt.
That's true. You know,
like, look at the silver lining of it all. But hopefully once all this COVID madness is done, John will invite me over to the haunted house and we can hang out together.
I know.
Because I would love to see it.
Yes. That would be so fun. Although, once the madness is over, hopefully I'm back in New York. But
oh my God,
anyway,
yes,
Darren,
I hope so.
Let's get started on this
week's
show.
I love you, Annie. Okay, let's get started. On Sunday, August 24th in 1992, in Zachary, Louisiana, a daughter of a 42-year-old woman named Connie Warner was about to start college the next day and couldn't get a hold of her mom. So she went to her mom's house and discovered a weird scene. Connie's chairs were all out of place, her glasses were on the floor, and her mattress was pushed halfway off the box spring. Now, this happens all the time. Like, I do my sheets and my mattress kind of slips and slides, but halfway off feels very odd.
Can I just say, my mattresses are fine, but I have like a 4-inch memory foam topper on top of my mattress. And every fucking morning I wake up and it's like perpendicular to my bed. And I'm like, was I running in full force in my mattress last night? Was I doing cartwheels and backflips? Like, that's the only thing that could possibly explain my memory foam topper being halfway off of my bed. But okay, let's, by the way, I'm in my haunted house, so God only knows what could actually be happening here, but
yeah, Lord knows.
Yeah.
Well, the police were called due to the scene, and there had been no forced entry, but bloodstains were discovered by the washer and dryer. In Connie's car, which was at the house, blood and other bodily fluids were discovered in the back seat. After 10 days, a trucker discovered Connie's body in a parking lot in Baton Rouge. 10 days. Oh, I mean, that's a while. Yeah. Police had determined the murder occurred in Connie's house. She had been placed in the back of the car, driven to Baton Rouge, where her body was dumped, and then the car had been driven back to the house and placed in the driveway. Mm. Okay. So the police questioned Connie's ex-husband, but a detective told the Oxygen show Mark of a Killer that he had an airtight alibi. Interesting. Okay. Others were questioned, but none of them became likely suspects. There were no fingerprints in the car. Detectives noted that the car's keys were missing. Then the case simply stalled.
And right away, I have, like, red flags are going up, because how are there no fingerprints in the car? I mean, even if somebody went through with whatever kind of, I don't know, duster or whatever, Clorox wipe, if you can find them these days, and, you know, patted the entire car down, surely there would be at least one fingerprint in the car. I thought that was a very bizarre factoid, if you will.
Yeah, no, that seems, it was clearly cleaned and scrubbed or something.
Yeah, something was going on. Well, in April of 1998, about 5 years after Connie was murdered, a woman called the police because a little boy who was a neighbor and who was a neighbor was wandering. Oh my God.
Wow.
I wish I had that drink now.
No,
let
you
me
were
try
drinking.
That.
You drank before this.
I was drinking.
Took three shots.
Maybe I was. Maybe yeah. I took a shot of bourbon and nobody needs to know. A little boy who was a neighbor was wandering around by himself, which I hate this shit. I see kids at the mall or wherever, you know, back in times when you would hang out in a mall, by the way. Mm-hmm. And there's always like young children by themselves. And I'm like, if you're under, I would say, not to go off on a tangent, Darren, but this was something that really sort of stuck out to me. If you're under the age of like 13 or 14, maybe, you really should not be wandering the mall by yourself. It really bothers me, and I always see it. I don't know if I'm on the lookout for it, and that's why I always see it, but do you ever notice, like, kids are just walking around by themselves anywhere?
I mean, I haven't been to a mall in quite some time, but sometimes I see, like, kids on the subway, but it's also, like, the nature of being a New Yorker. Like,
well, that's true. That that's a little bit different.
Yeah, there's some value to independence. You know, I mean, it's also hard for me to say, because, like, a kid wandering around, like, looking for the bathroom and then going right back to his parents, you know, if
it's a different thing.
It's kind of a different thing. I don't know. It's, I might not be paying attention to it as much, but I also haven't been to a mall in a long time.
Well, you know, I just think about all the shows we've done, and especially when we spoke with Francie Hakes, who was a former employee of the FBI.
Yes.
Just about all of the kids that get abducted and disappear. It's just,
but the
statistics
are still very low. Remember that. Be smart,
they are,
but they're still very low of that occurring.
That's true, but it's still happening, and I just want everyone listening to keep an eye on your kids. That's all I'm saying. Okay,
John,
let's get back to the story.
Keep your eye on John, yes.
And keep your eye on me as well. The responding detective said, quote, "There was a horrific scene there. Blood splatter. Blood drag marks all the way down the hall. It was just unreal. In my search of the house, I didn't locate anybody," end quote. When the detective found a contact lens on the carpet, by the way, that's amazing.
Yeah,
like,
wow.
Who would spot a contact lens?
I pick them up for my girlfriend all the time. I'm like, why are you putting your contacts on the floor? What's going
on? I would
on
have been
here?
Like, why are your eyes falling out?
What's going on? Yes.
You know? Yeah. Well, he found the contact lens. He said he knew someone had stomped her head or kicked her or did something very horrible right there. And that's a good point. I mean, you know, how else do they really get there if not, you know, some unfortunate scenario like that? Although, Darren, it sounds like there are other possibilities unless you're doing something like that to your girlfriend. I hope you're not.
Well.
Well, the victim was Randy Mebrewer. Hopefully I'm saying that last name right. A 28-year-old single mother. And guess where the crime took place? In Zachary, Louisiana, a block away from where Connie had lived.
Okay, that's not a coincidence to me then.
That's definitely not a coincidence. There was no body in the house. Detectives sent blood and hair samples to the lab. They discovered roses in a garbage can.
That's ominous.
Hmm. The car was at the house, but they couldn't find her keys. A criminal profiler said, quote, "It's not uncommon for serial killers to take tokens. Keys are all about power and control. These are symbols of freedom for these victims," end quote. And I feel like, didn't the Golden State Killer do this? Didn't he have a whole bunch of keys or like little tokens?
Like jewelry things. Killers love, I mean, even Dexter, you know, like had slides of people's blood. Like people love a memento as sick as
a little memento. Yeah. Well, detectives tried as hard as they could, but they could not turn up any solid suspects. They also never found Randy's body, which is just horrible to think of. One of the detectives said the small town of Zachary was living in fear, and he said he was worrying about his mother, his wife, and his daughter. But again, the case stalled.
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah, this Zachary is probably not a huge town. Well, three years later, on September 24th of 2001, the coworker of a Baton Rouge woman named Gina Green went to her house because she never showed up at work. The door was unlocked, and Gina's coworker discovered that she'd been viciously murdered, most likely strangled to death. Gina's cell phone was missing, and so were her keys, even though her BMW was parked in the driveway. So, a lot of missing keys here. This time, police were able to gather the DNA profile of an unknown male, but they couldn't get a match on it. The police departments in Baton Rouge and Zachary had not connected these cases together yet. Okay, so 8 months later, the roommate of 22-year-old Charlotte Murray Pace found her dead when she arrived home at the Baton Rouge townhouse they shared. Murray, as her friends called her, had just graduated from Louisiana State University as one of the youngest recipients of an MBA degree, according to court documents. She had a job lined up with a big consulting firm, Deloitte, and I think it's Touche or Touche.
Yeah, Touche or something, yeah.
And was heading with her roommate to a friend's out-of-town wedding for the weekend. But her roommate found her nearly nude body lying on the floor next to her bed with, quote, many small holes in her chest and stomach, according to court documents. Murray's throat was also cut open. A detective who worked the case said that there had been no forced entry. So again, it seems like somebody we know, maybe. Murray had been murdered in the bedroom, and the detectives, he said he saw blood evidence on every wall, including the ceiling, which is just brutal. You know, we've talked about the trajectory of blood before, and judging from her defensive wounds, Murray had fought hard with her attacker. The detective said, quote, "We could see that she had 81 stab wounds to the body. No one should have to experience that kind of trauma. You would not kill an animal like that." And that's true. Police also discovered that Murray's keys were missing and the DNA of an unknown male from Gina Green case matched with the crime scene. Baton Rouge reached out to police departments across the state and got a call from the police in Zachary. They determined all four cases were linked.
Yeah, they're pretty similar.
They're really similar. Just 81 stab wounds. Like, to take your fist and, like, make a fist, right, and, like, kind of hammer it down as if you're hammering something 81 times is tiring, right?
Yeah.
Let alone going into
a
human body. So this is brutal. This is brutal, people. The FBI was brought in to do a profile, and they determined the serial killer was a white male between the ages of 25 and 35, according to ABC News. Not vague, but at least gives a little bit some specifics. A criminal profile told Mark of a Killer, "This perpetrator is a criminal profiler's nightmare. This killer is a trophy collector. He takes tokens consistent with an organized serial killer. On the other hand, he doesn't clean up the crime scene. He engages in overkill. He apparently loses control. He's impulsive. So he doesn't fit in that disorganized serial killer category. He doesn't fit in any category."
Yeah, and I mean, I keep thinking about that DNA, and it's like, how frustrating must it be for these, you know, police investigators to get the DNA and see it right in front of their faces
and have no match.
And not have a match. Yeah, I mean, that has to be so frustrating.
I didn't know, was my child dead? Is my child passed out?
I just kept saying, please be okay, please be okay.
You rush your child to the hospital.
A woman came in, normal clothes. We get down the hallway, she closes the door.
They were accusing me of child abuse.
And that's when the real nightmare begins.
Hey, calm down.
No, it's my children! I can't calm down!
Do No Harm, a new podcast series from NBC News and Wondery. New episodes every Tuesday. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Well, 2 months later, a surveying crew discovered the body of 44-year-old Pamela Kinnamore, an antique shop owner, wife, and mother who'd been abducted from her home just 4 days earlier. Pamela's husband came home and saw the keys dangling outside the door. There were droplets of blood on the floor, and the furniture was out of place. Again, this is all somewhat similar. The DNA collected from Pam's body matched the other cases. So Wow. Now we have even another person here. Pam wore a toe ring that wasn't recovered from the crime scene or the dump site. So that's probably another memento.
Yeah.
Yeah. Police believe the killer couldn't find Pam's keys, so he took her toe ring as his memento. And it seemed police may have finally caught a break when a trucker reported that he saw a white pickup truck with what appeared to be an unconscious nude woman leaning on a window inside a white pickup truck. The driver of the pickup truck was a white male, but he couldn't provide any real details.
Damn it.
What? Yeah. It wasn't much to go on, but police pulled over more than 2,000 men and swabbed them to try to find the killer, which is interesting in and of itself. I mean, there's a little bit of a privacy thing there, but,
Yeah. You
know, if
a
you're
willing,
listen,
seizure. But I guess if you're willing.
I was going to say, if you're consenting to that, that's a great place to start. I mean, maybe they'd get lucky. But unfortunately, they didn't because they were unable to get anything from any of those swabs.
Well, on July 9th, 2002, a nurse named Diane Alexander, who lived 45 minutes west of Baton Rouge, had a man knock on her door. The man, who was black and said his name was Anthony, asked if she knew the Montgomerys and whether she could give him directions to their house. Diane said she didn't know the Montgomerys, and the man asked if she could use her phone and also asked if her husband might know the Montgomerys.
That's an interesting little detail.
Yeah,
there.
Like, and also, like, how do you know that I have a husband? Diane told Anthony that her husband didn't happen to be home at the moment.
Okay.
According to court documents, the man's demeanor quickly changed, and he forced his way into her house. Here's what the court document says. Quote,
okay. The
intruder caught her by the throat, told her not to try anything because he's armed with a knife and that he would poke her in the eye. He then attempted to rape her, but he could not maintain an erection. He then bludgeoned her and attempted to strangle her with a telephone cord he cut from the home computer that was close at hand. Alexander placed her hand between the telephone cord and her neck in an effort to stop her strangulation. She was passing in and out of consciousness when fortuitously her son Herman arrived at the residence. Oh my God. When the intruder heard Diane's car drive up their gravel driveway, he ran out the back door. Diane's son came into the house and saw her lying in a pool of blood. She had a skull fracture and was airlifted to a hospital where she spent 5 days, but thankfully she managed to recover. While a composite sketch was created, police didn't link this case with the others because they were focused on finding a white suspect who drove a truck.
Right, because there's a little bit of conflicting
details. And
she survived.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
You know?
Well, on November 24th, 2002, 5 months later, hunters, about an hour drive from Baton Rouge, found the body of Trenisha Dene Colombe, beaten to death and left in thick brush in a field. Trenisha was a student, and it's important to note that she was Black, while the other victims were all white. You know, this is definitely something I think criminal profilers often look at, you know, how when people are committing crimes, you know, are there sort of patterns with what they're targeting?
Of course.
Data suggests that the majority of serial killers don't cross racial lines. According to court documents, she'd been raped and had died of blunt force trauma to the head.
Oh, my God.
The DNA collected at the scene matched other cases. A witness saw a white pickup truck parked near Trenisha's car near the scene. Missing from her body was a ring that said, "Love." She's the killer's sixth victim. You know, again, another ring gone missing from a woman's body. You know, it's looking similar. About this time, a new kind of DNA testing became available. You know, I was talking about the importance of that. And when detectives ran the DNA again, they learned that the suspect was a Black male, not a white male. There were some hints that the killer might have been Black. Two witnesses told detectives they saw a Black man watching Charlotte Murray Pace's house the day that she was murdered, but the police had been focused on finding that white suspect.
I mean, and that's unfortunate because, you know, I feel like, and I don't really know what the protocol here is, but I do feel like, you know, if someone's telling her, hey, this guy, regardless of race, is watching this girl.
Right.
You know, like, what if he was an accomplice? You know, like, maybe he might not have put the hand to it. Maybe it was a white guy. But, like, you don't want to ask questions about that. That seems...
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
Well, a detective named David McDavid had been working a theory that the serial killer was a Zachary local who was probably already known to police. He went back and looked through old case files and found something that piqued his interest.
Can I just say one quick thing?
David McDavid?
David McDavid? I mean...
John
McJohn? I'm almost mad at... I'm almost Darren McDarren. I mean, I'm almost mad at the parents. Anyway,
I know,
not
it's
a
like,
big detail.
Why do parents do this? Like,
why do that?
Why don't do it?
Yeah.
So Detective McDavid told Mark of the killer, in 1993, we had an incident involving two kids in a graveyard. They were attacked by a Black male. They were hacked up by a big blade. The suspect had taken the keys. One of the victims, Michelle Chapman, said that she and her boyfriend had gone for a ride on a Saturday night and they pulled over by a cemetery to have a drink when a big guy with a machete opened up the back door and just started swinging it.
Can you imagine that? Like, oh my God.
Jesus. Michelle and her boyfriend were both badly hurt, but they survived because a police officer saw their hatch light on and came driving up. Wow. Michelle told Mark of a killer that it was by the grace of God that the police officer drove up at that exact moment. The perpetrator grabbed the victim's car keys and fled just in time. This dude with the fucking keys.
Him and these keys, I know.
What is he, a janitor? Michelle said that, quote, all I could remember was the smell of blood. His eyes were just fully bloodshot. He just looked like he was full of rage.
Ugh, and the smell of blood. Oh, my God,
just that. I
wonder if it's
like a mental break or something.
Yeah, maybe.
In 1997, the police arrested a local peeping Tom named Derek Todd Lee. He resembled, and it's the three names, so you know he's guilty. Just by
That's
three.
True,
yeah,
right.
You have three names. You're going by three names. It's happening. He resembled.
Something's going on.
Something's happening. Yeah. He
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Right.
Ugh.
Hello.
Who knows what's going on?
Michael Ian Black. People. Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Right.
Like
Taylor
these people.
Thomas.
Like, let's be honest, people.
Can I tell you one quick thing?
Yeah.
Devin Sawa followed me on Twitter. We'll talk about it on
Netflix
another shot.
How did we not get to that? Okay.
I know. We'll talk about
back
it next
week. Back
to
this gruesome murder before
I know,
we get
sorry.
To Devin Sawa. But
I know.
That's a huge accomplishment, John. Congratulations. So,
well, thank you.
So Derek Todd Lee resembled a sketch that had been created after Michelle Chapman and her boyfriend were attacked. Detective McDavid had Michelle come into the precinct and look at a lineup of men. She pointed to Derek Todd Lee and said, "That's him right there. I'm positive that's him."
I love when people do that, by the way.
They just
know. They fucking know. Like, you see the lineup, and you're like, it's him.
Right.
Right there. Yep.
Well, later, McDavid and his partner went to Lee's house, and at first he cooperated, talking with the investigators and even allowing them to look around his place, even though they didn't have a warrant. Okay. McDavid said, quote, "I went into the bedroom, and I opened up his closet, began searching. As I was searching, all of a sudden, I could feel the hair on the back of my head stand up. As I turned, here he was behind me. So I kind of just motioned back for him to step away, back up. Evidently, what I was doing made him nervous."
Yeah.
Well, then Derek changed his mind and made them leave. Even with a positive ID, they didn't have enough evidence to get a search warrant, and the statute of limitations came up on that 1993 machete incident, unfortunately.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, that's an interesting kind of detail there.
One might say, listen, if he's guilty, why would he let you in? But at the same time, these people can be cocky, and they feel like hiding in plain sight sometimes is the best place to hide.
Yeah, or they're just dumb, too, and they just don't
even know.
Well,
that might be true, too.
Well, David McDavid... Yeah. Didn't have evidence, you know.
You're never going to let it go.
McDavid.
Yeah, Matt,
I'm not going to let
McMahon.
That one go.
Matt McMahon.
Yeah, Matt McMahon. Well, that sounds like something that would happen to
me. Yeah, it does.
But David McDavid didn't have evidence connecting Derek Todd Lee to the murders, but he was suspicious. Detectives got together with the Attorney General's office, and they looked at the timeline of the murders. Now, according to ABC News, Derek had a criminal history, quote, including arrests for stalking, peeping into homes, burglary, and attempted murder, end quote. He'd been in and out of jail, and what the Attorney General and detectives realized was that the murders coincided with when Derek would get out of jail.
Uh-huh.
Now, when he was in jail, the murders stopped occurring. Now, if you go really into a deep dive into the serial subreddit, you will find that one of the people that a lot of investigators that are armchair detectives, Darren, like myself, thought that could have been the murderer of Heyman Lee... had just gotten out of jail at that same exact time. So,
right.
I don't know. It's just interesting because you see a lot of that. And remember, our first episodes of Martinis and Murder, we even thought that too. Like, because he went on a long spree where he wasn't murdering anybody. And we were like, is he in jail? Like,
right.
Where is he right now?
Well, anyway. We actually thought he got injured.
Or injured even. Yeah, that's right. Well, it was enough to convince a judge to give them a warrant to get Derek Todd Lee's DNA, and while detectives waited for the lab results, they looked into his past. Derek Todd Lee grew up about 20 minutes from Zachary, Louisiana. His mother had him when she was just 17 years old. A criminal psychologist said his biological father was severely mentally ill and went to prison for attempted murder.
Mm.
So let's just say this, not exactly the most idealistic upbringing, if you will.
Yeah, no, not at all.
She also said that his stepfather certainly disciplined him very heavily. As a child, Derek was described as a loner who attended special education classes, had chronic asthma, underwent speech therapy, and dropped out after the 11th grade.
Wow.
Definitely not, not a great setup.
And who knows, for someone who underwent speech therapy or was a loner in a special ed, kids could have been horrible to him. Just saying, I'm not saying it was okay what he did, but the mental, when you're in your formative years and developing mentally, that had to have been really hard for him.
I agree. A detective in his small hometown said, quote, I remember him as a young person. We heard of instances where he would torture animals, cats, dogs, stuff like that. Well, we've talked about that too.
That's a sign. Yeah, that's a sign.
Derek had a number of jobs, including a pipe fitter, sandblaster, painter, tool lifter, cement finisher, and drove a truck hauling chemicals for 6 months.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
On March 13th, 2003, a fisherman found the body of a 26-year-old Carrie Yoder submerged in Whiskey Bay in Louisiana. Yoder was a graduate student at LSU, and her boyfriend had reported her missing 10 days earlier. An autopsy reported that Carrie had been raped, strangled, beaten, and stomped.
Oh, I hate that.
DNA was recovered, and it came back as a match with Green, Pace, Kinnamore, and the Colomb murders. The lab also came back with DNA results on Derek Todd Lee. It confirmed he was the killer in all of the cases. He was the Baton Rouge serial killer. And police went to his house, of course, but he'd already fled. During the manhunt, they also went to his girlfriend's house. By chance, Derek called her cell phone when detectives were talking to her.
Oh, okay.
Wow. And because of the call, they were able to get his number and trace his phone to Atlanta, Georgia. It was only a matter of time before they tracked him down. Derek refused to confess and wouldn't go for a plea deal. The jury only needed 2 hours to find him guilty, which is pretty much an open and shut case. I mean, this is...
Yeah, that's true.
2 hours is not long to decide a man's fate. And in 2014, Derek Todd Lee was convicted for the murder of Charlotte Murray Pace and sentenced to death, according to local ABC affiliate WBRZ. Derek died in 2016, just 4 years ago, of heart disease while serving his sentence. Michelle Chapman, the woman who was attacked with a machete along with her boyfriend, said, quote, took me a long time to even say his name because I just hated so much of hearing his name. You're always looking over your shoulder, always listening to footsteps, and you know who's behind me. It's a relief, though, to know now that he's not on the streets anymore, and he can't hurt women anymore, and he can't murder them either.
And, like, can you imagine, like, all of this basically kind of, well, at least the wrapping up of this case happened because police just happened to be with the girlfriend when he called? I mean,
like,
I'm sure
eventually they would have found him, but like,
yeah, right.
My God.
It's just crazy. Yeah. Like, that's crazy. Well, it's great to know that, you know, like you said, Darren, was somewhat of an open and shut case. Listen, if there's DNA connecting you to all these murders, you know, you're guilty, my friend.
Yeah, it doesn't look great for you, I gotta say. Yeah, it doesn't look great for you.
So let us know what you guys think about this week's episode. Follow us on social media, Jay Thrasher, Carpe Darren. You can even follow Matt the Bartender if you must.
If you have to.
We would love to hear what you think about this week's episode. Darren, I did give Annie my shout out. You love her. You want to hang out with her.
I'm obsessed with her.
You're obsessed with her.
Yes.
And maybe one day you'll meet her. I don't know. But why don't you wrap us up with one last shout out?
Hi, Annie. I love you. Okay. As we mentioned on Another Shot last week, we saw that many of you have tagged us in your Spotify Wrapped Top Podcast list, which is awesome. We are so incredibly thankful to you for listening to our show. Connor on Instagram listened to us for 7,000 minutes this year, which is 4 days and 21 minutes straight. We mentioned you on Another Shot. That's insane. Brendan, Lindsay, Shanna, Maritza, Maribel, Clarissa, Maddie, Maria, Coral, and so many more. Thank you for always supporting us. You guys are absolutely fantastic. I really appreciate it. And you know what? I wanted to give a shout out to specifically our Facebook group because
oh my God.
I know that there had been some certain stalkings of my girlfriend online, and I forgot about that. You know, when someone briefly mentioned it, nothing bad or anything like that.
No,
the fans sort of, you know, came to the defense of just being like, hey, respect people's privacy, or, you know, just know that they're not on the show. And I gotta say, like, it was really sweet to see that happen and it done peacefully and reasonably and just with so much decorum. So thank you. For doing that. Yes, Nadine is my girlfriend. Yes, she is the showrunner of Below Deck Mediterranean. That is what I will give you guys.
You're confirming it.
I'm
here
confirming
on the show.
It. Yeah, and she's a bombshell. So, or as the new turn I learned, she's a baddie, which I didn't know what that
she's
meant.
She's a baddie.
She's a baddie. But thank you so much for respecting her privacy. You guys are truly incredible. You know, I never asked you to do that, and it was great to see it all spring into action as it happened. So thank you so much. It's nice to see good people.
Yeah, and we should mention the person that was sort of curious didn't mean any harm in it.
Nothing wrong at all. Like, there was nothing even bad that was said. In fact, it was, like, very complimentary and soothing, which I laughed at in a good way and felt really warm by it. But it was just nice to see, like, a nice conversation. It wasn't getting crazy. You know, there wasn't any, like, oh, screw her or this or that or I hate her show or anything. It was just very nice, and I appreciate everyone for that.
Yeah, well, I think I should take this moment too, Darren, if you don't mind, to confirm that I am married, of course, to David Archuleta.
Yeah,
so
we were all wondering. No, everyone was curious. Yeah, it was.
No, thank you.
Megan texts me every day being like, when's John going to admit it? And I'm like, I don't know.
When's the announcement? It's today, and we are married, and he is my husband. Please download his new album, Therapy Sessions, and please help us put food on the table by streaming it. Thank you.
Yeah, dear Lord, help him put food on the table so we can get out of that goddamn Maryland house, that creepy
haunted house.
Seriously.
Okay, guys, that's it for this week's episode. Darren, thank you for confirming that, and we love you all.
We love you all.
Friendly and patient you are, and we'll see you on Thursday for another shot.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.